Hoover, a member of the board for Our Community Cares volunteer organization, and you're in tune to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on Wednesday, November 23rd. We have a busy show today. We will hear from historian Heather Bruegel later in the show. She is an expert in all things Hudson Valley history and has been giving a decolonizing Thanksgiving talk lately in the area, and we'll hear about that on this Thanksgiving Eve. We'll also hear from Jenny Getty and Amanda Lees about what movies are playing locally this weekend if you want to go out instead of celebrating at home. Plus, we'll have the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song. It's time for the WGXC local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news.
On Wednesday, November 30th, Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers from Catskill celebrate the release of their new single, I Believe in You, from the album How Many Roads, performing at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. That's Wednesday, November 30th at 8 p.m. at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. Lex Gray and her Urban Pioneers band that usually features Sonny Rock, Ed Wilisky, Brian DeWan, and Tim Farrell. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information about this show and many others.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
Wayfarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Roger Hennigan Gilson reports for the Times Union that more than 2 years after mechanic Harold Handy was badly beaten during a July 4th party at the Kinderhook home of a Columbia County Sheriff's deputy, jury selection is set to begin November 28th in the trial of his alleged assailants. Deputy Kelly Rosenstrock, her husband, former gym owner Alan Rosenstrock, IRS agent Brian Hogg, and contractor Corey Gaylord were indicted on gang assault charges in the case, which sent Handy to the hospital in the early hours of July 5, 2020. Columbia County Judge Richard Kowiek dismissed the top charges against all four in December 2021, but each of them still faces a felony charge of unlawful imprisonment, as well as various misdemeanors. The trial will begin November 28th, according to Paul Der Ohausen, to Hogg's attorney. Handy's then fiance alleged in a deposition that Alex Rosenstruck punched Handy 3 times in the face and put him in a chokehold after the mechanic tried to participate in a martial arts demonstration at the party. As Handy and his fiance tried to leave the party, Alex Rosenstruck attacked the man again. According to the deposition, several partygoers allegedly joined Rosenstruck in beating Handy, and Kelly Rosenstruck warned Handy's fiancée to not call the police. Handy's fiancée was eventually allowed to call paramedics, who arrived at the party with on-duty sheriff's deputies. The deposition was given under oath, but counsel for the defendants were not able to challenge her account. In a recent interview, Dara Hohausen said on the night of the assault, his client was, quote, clearly acting in response to a threat, unquote, adding that Hogg was not present for many of the alleged events that night. Handy claimed his injuries required surgery to insert a metal plate into his face, but the DA's office was never able to produce the medical documents to substantiate the claim. That led to Koeig's dismissal of the top counts as charged by the grand jury. The charge of unlawful imprisonment, if proven, carries a maximum sentence of 4 years in prison. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Kevin Frey in New York State of Politics speaks with Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, recently elected to represent New York's 19th Congressional District. Republican Molinaro claims the midterm results show Americans want leaders to work together, taking away Democrats' control of the House of Representatives. Molinaro said, and I quote, "It is our responsibility not only to provide the checks and balances and results here in Washington, but I think also to speak up when Albany acts in a way that New Yorkers don't feel is appropriate for them," end quote. New York was key for Republicans flipping the House, with four districts switching from Democrats after the votes were counted. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Robin K. Cooper reports for the Albany Business Review that Redburn Property Services, a construction arm for the prolific regional developer by the same name, has been sued by four black laborers over allegations of systemic discrimination. The workers claim Redburn and five supervisors nicknamed them the, quote, felony crew, unquote, and regularly referred to them using racial slurs. Tony Gentry, Joseph Sherman, Abdullah McPherson, and Shaquem Taylor claim they were denied promotions, paid lower wages than their white coworkers, and were often not paid for all their work. Hired at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the men allege Redburn foreman and the supervisors denied them masks, respirators, and other gear, despite ordering them to work at dusty and hazardous construction sites. The four plaintiffs are seeking unpaid wages as well as damages for harassment, discrimination, and unlawful termination, as well as compensatory and punitive damages. Jeff Buell, a principal of Redburn Development Partners, said the company is taking the complaint seriously. Quote, "The allegations in the complaint are incredibly difficult to read and fly in the face of our core values," unquote, Buell wrote late last week. Quote, "We have immediately launched an internal investigation, but given the seriousness of the allegations, we are in the process of engaging outside counsel to conduct an independent investigation. Our company and its leaders remain committed to a workplace free of harassment and discrimination," unquote. Besides Redburn Property Services, other defendants named in the lawsuit are supervisors and foremen Eric Smith, Chris Colwell, Justin Kramer, Michael Levitt, and John Barnes. Redburn Property Services is the construction and property management arm of Redburn Development Partners, one of the largest real estate developers in the region. Redburn was responsible for the $10 million conversion of the former Candle Factory on Cross Street in Hudson's First Ward, transforming it into the 55-room hotel called The Wick. Read more about this story at bizjournals.com.
Diane Valden reports in the Columbia paper that officials in COPEC amended the COPEC zoning code on November 10th to regulate, and I quote, "the time, place, and manner of the operation of licensed adult-use cannabis retail dispensaries," end quote. COPEC officials previously voted to allow retail cannabis sales in the Columbia County town. Councilman Stanley Skansowski said cannabis sales should be in agricultural districts, adding that only one dairy farm remains in COPEC, and there were six when he took office several years ago. He said, and I quote, "I believe they should be on working farms. Bringing in places to sell cannabis will change the character of the town. Let the farms be able to support themselves," end quote. Empire and Langdon Farms in COPEC grow cannabis, but Ken Down, attorney for the town's planning and zoning boards, said according to town code, and I quote, "you can't do retail in an RU, agricultural and rural residential district," end quote, and that state law prohibits farms from retail sales. Dow said, and I quote, "You cannot raise and sell on the same property," end quote. Instead, council members voted 4-0, with Gansowski abstaining, to restrict cannabis sales to these locations. Hamlet Business, HB, located in Carrieville around the County Route 7, Carrieville Road, Route 23 intersection, and a section of Route 23 east and west of the intersection, West Copaig around County Route 7 and 7A Triangle area, Copaig along Main and Church Streets, and in Copaig Falls along a section of State Route 344. Highway Business, HW-B, located on County Route 7A, north and south of the Copaig Hamlet, sections of Route 22 from the Copaig Veterinary Hospital to Route 344 and further north from approximately Yonderview Road north to the old Rojan School. Mixed Use, MU, located in the vicinity of the Rojan Library and in the area of the Catamount on Route 23. Cannabis sales are expected to begin in New York before the end of the year, and there are currently no applications for dispensaries before the Copaig Planning Board, although there were some earlier inquiries. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
David Lee reports for the Columbia paper that the retirement of one of the most celebrated caisson horses of the U.S. Army was announced November 11th at the Equine Advocates Rescue and Sanctuary in Chatham. Sergeant York served for 25 years as the riderless horse for military funerals at Arlington National Cemetery, including services for former President Ronald Reagan and General Colin Powell. A citation marking the occasion was composed by Governor Kathy Hochul and read out by Equine Advocates President and Founder Susan Wagner. Columbia County Veterans Services Agency Director Gary Flattery also spoke. The caisson platoon is part of the 3rd Infantry. The horses chosen must have an imperturbable temperament and be black or gray in color. Born in 1991, Sergeant York is a standard-bred racehorse who had a brief racing career under the name Alibord Jules before joining the Army in 1997. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
WNYT reports on the state announcement of the first 36 cannabis dispensary licenses in New York announced on November 21st. Tremaine Wright, the chair of the Cannabis Control Board, said, and I quote, "This is a monumental moment, and it represents the last leg of the cannabis supply chain that requires licensure," end quote. But none of the retail locations just announced are in the Hudson Valley. A court ruling earlier this month delayed the board from approving dispensaries in the Hudson Valley because of a legal dispute over licensing criteria. So cannabis sales expected to begin before the end of the year may not start then locally. New York legalized recreational use of cannabis in March 2021, but has been building the infrastructure and laws for retail sales since then. And you can read more about this story at the WNYT website.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 47 degrees. Wednesday night, it will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 28 degrees. And on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny with a temperature high near 45 degrees. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 31 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wednesday, November 23rd is Thanksgiving Eve, and everyone will be out shopping last minute to get the food ready time for Thursday. But WGXC has music to cook by, music to shop by, and more on Wednesday, November 23rd, including 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from historian Heather Bruegel about the decolonizing Thanksgiving talk she's been giving lately. Then at 10 a.m., it's time for Evan McCormick's Music and Time program. He's from Catskill. Then we head to Hudson at 11 a.m. for Maria Manhattan's Hudson Cafe with music from the American Songbook. As you get ready on Wednesday evening for the activities on Thursday, we've got Off the Hook Live at 7 p.m., simulcast from WBAI in New York City. It's from the 2600 Hacker Collective and all about technology. And Neva Wartell has Music from the Masses at 8 p.m. with African rock music. And at 10 p.m. it's time for Rob Saffer's 8th Annual Thanksgiving Trifanifest of Intolerable Music on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Once again this year, Hudson's Bindlestiff Family Circus is part of the annual Sinterklaas Festival in Rhinebeck. It's on Saturday, December 3rd this year, with the Bindlestiff Family Circus performing and the Upstate Films Big Theater at 1:45 p.m. in Rhinebeck, and in the Little Theater at 3 p.m. That's at Rhinebeck's Sinterklaas Festival all day in Rhinebeck on Saturday, December 3rd. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
You like music?
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues right here on WGXC. The show is a monthly roundup of new offerings from the worlds of psych, indie, jangle pop, experimental music, and folk, bolstered with enough classic fodder to make them stick.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
Tune in to Crawl Out from the Fallout every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXE 90.7 FM.
How can I say no to that?
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, November 23rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 21 degrees in Claryville to 37 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 41 degrees. Closest likely snowfall today is 600 miles away off of New Brunswick. Today, locally, will be dry and mostly sunny, high of 48 at 1 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 28 degrees. Then, Thanksgiving is looking very similar with a high of 46. Light winds will be around and it will be mostly sunny. Just remember the coat and maybe a hat. 34 degrees overnight takes us into a rainy looking Friday with a high of 48. Overnight, rain tapers off and we get a low of 34. Hopefully it doesn't freeze, complicating any travel plans. Saturday dries out and gets up to 49 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:16 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:52 a.m. Looking way up, we see solar wind speed is currently 302 kilometers per second at a chunky 14 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 30 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 61. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Take it easy in traffic.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Shea Masterson of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air. Here on We Love Radio.
I was riding on the Mayflower when I thought I spied some lead.
Start again. Wait a minute, now. Okay, take two.
I was riding on the Mayflower and I thought I spot some land. I yelled for Captain E-Rib, I have you understand. Who came running to the deck, said, boys, forget the wheel. We're going over yonder, cut the engines, change the sails. Haul on the bowline, we sang that melody like all tough sailors do when they're far away at sea. I think I'll call it America, I said as we hit land. I took a deep breath, I fell down, I could not stand. Captain Arab, he started writing up some deeds. He said, let's set up a fort and start buying a place with beads. Just then this cop comes down the street, crazy as a loon. He throws us all in jail for carrying harpoons. Ah, me, I busted out, don't even ask me how. I went to get some help, I walked by Guernsey Cow, who directed me down to the Bowery slums, where people carried signs around saying, ban the bums. I jumped right into line, saying, I hope that I'm not late, when I realized I hadn't eaten for 5 days straight. Looking for the cook, I told him I was the editor of a famous etiquette book. The waitress, he was handsome, he wore a powder blue cape. I ordered some Suzette, I said, could you please make that crepe? Just then the whole kitchen exploded from boiling fat. Food was flying everywhere, I left without my hat. Now, I didn't mean to be nosy, but I went into a bank to get some bail for Arab and all the boys back in the tank. They asked me for some collateral and I pulled down my pants. They threw me in the alley when up comes this girl from France who invited me to her house. I went, but she had a friend who knocked me out and robbed my boots and I was on the street again. Well, I rapped upon a house with a U.S. flag upon display. I said, could you help me out? I got some friends down the way. The man says, get out of here, I'll tear you limb from limb. I said, you know they refused Jesus too. He said, you're not him. Get out of here before I break your bones, I ain't your pop. I decided to have him arrested and I went looking for a cop. I ran right outside, I hopped inside a cab. I went out the other door, this Englishman said fab. As he saw me leap a hot dog stand in a chariot that stood parked across from a building advertising Brotherhood. I ran right through the front door like a hobo sailor does. But it was just a funeral parlor and a man asked me who I was. I repeated that my friends were all in jail with a sigh. He gave me his card. He said, call me if they die. I shook his hand and said goodbye. Ran out to the street when a bowling ball came down the road and knocked me off my feet. A payphone was ringing. It just about blew my mind. When I picked it up and said hello, this foot came through the line. Well, by this time I was fed up at trying to make a stab at bringing back any help for my friends and Captain Arab. I decided to flip a coin like either heads or tails. But let me know if I should go back to ship or back to jail. So I hocked my sailor suit and I got a coin to flip. It came up tails around my sail, so I made it back to the ship. Well, I got back and took the parking ticket off the mast. I was ripping it to shreds when this Coast Guard boat went past. They asked me my name and I said Captain Kidd. They believed me but they wanted to know what exactly that I did. I said for the Port of Ebrook I was employed. They let me go right away, they were very paranoid. Well, the last I heard of Arab, he was stuck on a whale that was married to the deputy sheriff of the jail. But the funniest thing was when I was leaving the bay, I saw three ships sailing, they were all heading my way. I asked the captain what his name was and how come he didn't drive a truck. He said his name was Columbus, I just said good luck.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The last question was one posed that makes clear that basically, other than the fact that this involves a former president, everything else about this is indistinguishable from any pre-indictment search warrant.
The 11th Circuit of the U.S. Court of Appeals heard oral arguments Tuesday about the special master appointed to review classified documents seized at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. Trump called the move a witch hunt from an egregiously corrupt Biden administration and their weaponized Department of Justice. Biden administration press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre reiterated Attorney General Merrick Garland is operating independently. Following the midterms, Republicans are wondering about their future after Trump-backed candidates fared poorly. Chris Sununu, Republican governor of New Hampshire, feels he has a winning strategy for the GOP.
I got a great policy for the Republican Party. Let's stop supporting crazy, unelectable candidates in our primaries and start getting behind winners that can close the deal in November.
A poll by AARP found New Hampshire voters were ticket-splitting in the election, in which Sununu was reelected, but so was Democratic U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan. With Thanksgiving one day away, Dr. Anthony Fauci urged people to get their updated COVID-19 booster shots as soon as possible. In what could be his final appearance as director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Fauci reflected on his time in the position.
I would like people to remember about what I've done is that every day for all of those years, I've given it everything that I have and I've never left anything on the field.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is calling for the resignation of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. McCarthy said under Mayorkas's leadership, fentanyl flowed freely into the U.S. from Mexico, and he criticized high rates of suicide among Border Patrol agents.
If Secretary Mayorkas does not resign, House Republicans will investigate every order, every action, and every failure will determine whether we can begin impeachment inquiry.
This comes as McCarthy and House Republicans plan to use their slim majority to their advantage. McCarthy has called for the removal of several Democratic representatives from committees to begin investigations into the Biden administration and the First Family. A Politico Morningstar poll finds only 28% of surveyed voters want Congress to focus on a presidential impeachment inquiry or Hunter Biden's business dealings. Instead, those surveyed want Congress to focus on fentanyl trafficking into the U.S., operations at the U.S.-Mexico border, and the 2022 infant formula shortage. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Yesterday, we shared results from a Tufts University poll which found that the 27% turnout of young voters was critical to the outcome of the midterm election, particularly in battleground states. We have more from that poll today, including the turnout by young voters of color. The poll from Tufts University's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, or CIRCLE, showed that in U.S. House races, younger white voters 18 to 29 favored Democratic candidates 57% to 39%, with 4% other. Among younger black voters, 87% voted Democratic, 9% Republican, and 4% other. Younger Latino voters chose Democrats to a lesser percentage, but still 67% Democrat, 30% Republican, and 3% other. Gender breakouts from the poll are also interesting. Young women 18 to 29 voted 71% for Democrats and 26% for Republicans. Young men voted 53% Democratic and 42% Republican. Among LGBT youth, 93% voted for Democratic U.S. House candidates. These demographics won't go unnoticed. We'll be discussing in an upcoming report what state legislation we can expect to make it more complicated for younger citizens to exercise their freedom to vote. We have links to articles and resources at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. You want to kick it off?
I would love to kick it off. So as always, I will start by telling you about what's playing at the Crandall Theater in Chatham. We have Ticket to Paradise. We have this weekend upcoming Decision to Leave, which I'm so stoked to see. I'm so glad it's finally playing nearby.
What is that? Sorry to interrupt.
Of course. It's the new Park Chan-wook movie.
Oh.
It's a, from what I understand, it's a crime thriller. It's like less... you know, freaky revenge than his usual movies. Less like freaky horny than his usual movies, but I hear good things. I'm very excited to see it. I'm a Park Chan-wook super fan,
You know. All right, amazing.
We also have a special screening of The Polar Express on November 26th. Also coming up at the beginning of December, we have Hopper, An American Love Story, After Sun, Tar, RRR is coming back, baby! Call Jane, The Banshees of Inisherin, and Klaus. And you can find those specific showtimes at crandalltheater.org.
Amazing. I really want to see The Banshees of Inisherin. You really let that roll right off your tongue like you speak Gaelic or whatever.
I practiced it. Because I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to say this one. I didn't look it up, so I hope that my guess was sufficient. Don't correct me if I'm wrong.
Sounded amazing.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. We have the new Black Panther movie, Wakanda Forever. Strange World, which I've never heard of, but it looks a little bit like Osmosis Jones. And The Menu, which does look appealing to me. I'm trying to see The Menu as well. I love a freaky food movie.
I know, same.
And it's maybe a cult movie. We'll see.
Exciting.
Yep.
Now I shall tell you about upstatefilms.org. Starting with the location in Rhinebeck, we have Decision to Leave, She Said, and The Banshees of Inisherin.
Amazing.
And heading on over to the Upstate Films in Saugerties, we have Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Bones and All, The Menu, Tar, and Neil Young, : Harvest Time. And you can find those specific showtimes at upstatefilms.org.
Gorgeous. I realize I didn't even say the web address for the Wyndham Theater because I'm so nervous to be here without my radio dad. So those aforementioned movies at the Wyndham Theater, you can find out more at wyndhamtheater.com. That's WINDHAM theater.com. And I'll tell you about what's at Spotlight Cinemas in Hudson, New York on Fairview Avenue, otherwise known as the 8-screen cinema or the 8-plex Cineplex. It's called all sorts of things locally. We have Bones and All, Devotion, The Menu, The Banshees of Inisherin, Strange World, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Ticket to Paradise, Black Adam, and Lyle Lyle Crocodile. And you can find out more about showtimes and tickets at spotlightcinemas.com.
And now, please allow me to tell you what's playing at TSL in Hudson, also known as Time and Space Limited. You could be watching After Sun, My Architect, Triangle of Sadness, Cat Daddy's still there. And that looks like that's it for this particular week. But they always have lots of things playing, and you should head out and check. Head over and check out their schedule at timeandspace.org. We're so nervous.
We're so nervous. So crazy.
But we're doing great.
We're doing great.
You can't tell.
It's so nice to be back in the studio. Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I am Heather Briegel. I'm an enrolled citizen of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin, first-line descendant Stockbridge Muncie, and I work as a public historian and consultant.
Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
It's been a while since we've had you on this program, and you're now based locally, and as you mentioned, you're working as a freelance historian and consultant. So I'd love to talk about what that work is for you, and what are some of the talks that you have been invited to give?
Yeah, I am local now. I'm right here in the Hudson River Valley, which is kind of cool. I think last time I spoke with you, I was still in the Midwest. And I am not there anymore. But so a lot of the work that I do revolves around public history, primarily Indigenous history, and bringing it to the forefront of everyone's mindfulness, making sure that they understand the history of Indigenous peoples. You know, I've been invited to do talks on a number of topics, whether that's, you know, well, this is very timely, but it's November, Thanksgiving. So I've been invited to do talks on how do you decolonize Thanksgiving? You know, who were the original New Yorkers in sense of like who was living in the land? I have been invited to do talks on current and contemporary Indigenous issues, such as the Indian Child Welfare Act, which I did I've done a couple of times. And the last one I did regarding that was at the Brooklyn Law School. And then also on MMIW, which is an epidemic within Indian country that, you know, not a lot of people know about outside the communities. And so we want to bring awareness to that. I've talked on boarding schools and how to create places of inclusivity. So you name it, as long as it deals with Indigenous histories, I've probably talked about it.
What are the talks that you enjoy giving most?
The talks that I enjoy giving the most deal with policy in a historical basis. So whether that is just an overview of federal Indian policy, which I do a talk on, or issues, contemporary issues today that deal with policy, that's what I absolutely love. When I was finished with my graduate school program, I had toyed around with the idea of actually going to law school because I just love policy so much. And the intricacies of federal Indian policy are interesting to delve into and try to understand because it's so different than any other type of law. Well, I did not go to law school, but my love of policy never wavered. And so I really enjoy talking about that, but from historical perspective. So how did a policy come to be? Or for example, of the Indian Child Welfare Act, how did ICWA become a policy that was needed to protect Indigenous children? So then that leads into other topics that are in Indigenous history that combine my love of history and my love of policy all into one. So I kind of like talking about anything from a historical perspective because I feel like you have to have that historical basis in order to understand a topic.
We could spend a couple of segments just on talking about the policies that have to do with reservations. What are some of the basic things to understand about the history of there is sovereignty over these lands, but it also creates these restrictions and lack of resources. What are some of the basic things we should know about that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that people are completely surprised about when they hear me talk, and when I talk about land or reservations or anything like that, people are primarily surprised to learn that Indigenous tribes, Native nations, however you want to classify them, don't actually own the reservation land that they're on. It's the deed, the title to that land is held in trust by the federal government. And people are, their minds are just blown when they hear that because you think, oh, you have reservation land. Oh, you must own it. No, we don't own it at all. And makes it very easy for the federal government at any time, you know, to take it away if they wanted to. But this, the idea that the deeds or titles of the land are held in trust by the federal government comes from a time period where the federal government didn't deem indigenous peoples, native peoples, as competent enough to handle their own affairs. So if we weren't competent enough to, quote, handle our own affairs, I'm assuming they mean, you know, Eurocentric kind of affairs, then we weren't competent enough to hold the deeds or titles to the land that we were on. So that's just, it's just a really interesting concept. So people are always like, that's just such a concept that people just, they're just mind blown by it. And they're like, so you don't own the land, so, but you live on it. So what happens when you, if you pass away, like, do you get to pass it to your children? No, it reverts back to the tribe. And I mean, sometimes it can, depending on tribal land policies, sometimes it can be, you know, you can pass it down to a next of kin, but nobody actually owns it. So I think out of anything, that's probably the thing that people, such a misconception about the most, is that we own that land and we don't own it.
Is there linkage between the murdered and missing Indigenous women and the investigations that are taking place where if it takes place on sovereign land, these lands that are reservations, that they aren't investigated properly?
Yeah. So I think you're hinting at, are there issues within jurisdiction?
Thank you.
of who can investigate these crimes? And yeah, absolutely. I don't even know where to start on answering that question, because yes, there are issues within criminal jurisdiction when it comes to investigating crimes of missing and murdered Indigenous women, whether they happen on tribal lands, non-tribal lands. Is your state a public law 280 state? Is it not a public law 280 state? Does the BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, have jurisdiction over it? Does the FBI have jurisdiction over it? And what's the role of tribal police? So there is so much that goes into trying to figure out who can investigate a crime before a crime's even investigated. So once that's figured out, which can be quite difficult to figure out, time goes by and leads in criminal investigations become smaller and perpetrators can get away. And there's also this, it's not a concept, it's an actual thing. Some of it's changing now with, policies that are being passed, like, for example, under the Violence Against Women Act, some things have changed, but if a non-Native perpetrator or person commits a crime on reservation land, Indigenous land, the tribal court system doesn't have jurisdiction over them. And so it gives this idea that tribal lands are just places that you can go to commit these crimes and you can get away with it because the tribal police don't have jurisdiction over you. So you can commit a crime on tribal land, leave tribal land, and by the time the crime gets investigated, you're already long gone. So yes, there is this complicated relationship between tribal criminal justice and federal criminal justice on who can investigate said crimes and bring people to justice for them.
I think it's important here to note that even though it's only recently been gaining some more attention, this epidemic of murdered and missing Indigenous women, it's been since colonization, this has been happening, and it's been a long time issue. Yeah. Before I let you go, thank you so much, Heather Briegel, for joining us. What is one thing that you'd really love listeners to understand around the work that you're doing or around some of the issues that you talk about?
First and foremost, Indigenous people are still here. We might not be in the numbers that we once were prior to colonization starting, but we're still here. And we still have histories that are rich and vibrant and stories that we want to share and issues that we want to talk about. And, You know, you can educate yourself on our histories and be open to learning something new. And so I really just want people, when they see, you know, programs happening by Indigenous artists, speakers, scholars, what have you, go to them, learn, because you're going to learn about a side of history that you didn't know before. And, you know, support Indigenous-led causes, support Indigenous-owned businesses. Like, we're getting ready to do holiday shopping, you know, support those businesses, because when you do that, you're supporting culture and tradition and language continuously happening. And that's, I think, more important than anything in the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.
Baltimore. Took a look at the mercury, 40 below. No time for a lady to be dragging her feathers around in the snow. Leaving her maid, she flew straight to the Tangipaho, where a two-timing blackbird met the divine Miss O. I'd like to ruffle its plumage, this Baltimore Oreo. Messed around with that blackbird till he singed her wings, but forgiving.